Stories bigger than Texas, the Alamo Podcast. Texas is a state of mind, an independent mind, an attitude that can be traced back to San Antonio's pioneers and one man in particular, Samuel Augustus Maverick, a name that today describes that Texas state of mind. Today we reveal Maverick's deep roots at the Alamo. He was here during the siege and he returned after the battle. The cannons he unearthed and preserved for the historic record, and the legacy the Maverick family builds upon today to remember the Alamo. I'm your host, Emily Baucom. We're joined today by Maverick descendant Kenneth Maverick, who runs the business Maverick Whiskey, and the Alamo senior researcher and historian Colby Lanham. Thank you both for joining us today.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Ken, your family's history in Texas begins with Samuel Augustus Maverick, who moved to Texas in March 1835, just in time to get a front row seat for the Texas Revolution.
Yes, it was kind of happenstance. He was not really a revolutionary. He was actually involved in a duel in South Carolina about states' rights and shot a man. And when you shoot a prominent politician's son, you got to leave town. And so he came to Texas. He was an attorney by trade, but also had largely an agrarian background, was into viticulture and farming, and land acquisition was the main reason he came. And so he started doing some maps of the city, and that's how he got involved in the revolution.
Colby, he keeps a diary during the Battle of Bear. How important is that kind of primary documentation to a historian and researcher like you?
It's really important to us to be able to get a glimpse into the past and what was happening in early San Antonio during that time period. It's extremely important to the Texas revolutionaries who are contemplating whether or not they should come and attack the city. When he is released, I mean, he's held for a short time. And when he's released, he provides very valuable information about troop strengths, fortification, and he's one of the ones that helps muster the men under Ben Milam to attack the city.
Ken, he had been at the Alamo during the siege up until March 2nd. Why was he sent away?
Our family history tells us, and I think other histories kind of confirm, that he was voted by the men inside to both go get help and be Behar's representative to the Washington on the Brazos. And so he had a legal background and was somewhat of a reluctant revolutionary, I think, and it was probably a combination of those where he was sent, you know, under the dark of night and somehow made it through, which I'm obviously very grateful for. I wouldn't be here right now.
He signed the Texas Declaration of Independence.
He did. He made the trek in about 3 or 4 days and I believe arrived March 6th and was one of the last signatures on the document. And I believe the first several copies of it, correct me if I'm wrong, did not have a signature, and he was a later signature. So there were some kind of variations. Everything was handwritten back then. And so he signed it, Samuel Maverick of Behar.
After the Revolution, he served twice as San Antonio's mayor and also served in the Texas legislature. In the middle of this public service, he becomes imprisoned by Mexican forces in 1843.
He lived kind of what I call kind of a Forrest Gump life and had 9 lives, where that was probably one of the more trying parts of his life, where Santa Anna, you know, came back to San Antonio several years later with a bit of a grudge. And what do you do when you're trying to take over a city is you basically kidnap all the lawyers and judges. And he took them 1,000 miles south by foot. He's took up to diary of all these, we would call them misadventures, where they were really, you know, kind of abused and slept in muck. And it's as amazing he survived that as anything else. And he wrote letters to the United States for, you know, freeing the other men. And he was offered freedom by Santa Anna if he basically said that the Texas Revolution was not legitimate and swore to Mexico, and he refused to do it. Rather stay with his own men until eventually he was released from the Mexican Perote prison and walked back to San Antonio to meet his wife, who'd missed him for a year.
Samuel Augustus Maverick acquired a lot of land. Tax rolls showed in 1844 he owned more than 35,000 acres across the San Antonio area. But perhaps the most important piece of land to the Alamo story was a house he built in 1852.
after essentially surviving the Alamo, and he called himself the sole escapee, he had a tremendous survivor's guilt. He knew, you know, most of the men inside, and he really dedicated his life to their memory. And at the time, the area around the Alamo, it was a war zone and probably not the best place to live in San Antonio. And so he wanted and convinced his young wife, Mary, to make their family homestead next to the Alamo. So they acquired
the northwest corner of the site where modern-day Hotel Gibbs is.
Correct, correct. There was an acequia. He kind of remodeled, I think it was called the Madre Ditch at the time. And they made that part of the irrigation to their peach orchard, which is now Travis Park. Reestablished kind of an agrarian type existence, but also helped develop that area town that he named at the time Alamo City, because he wanted to do tribute, and eventually donated Travis Park in the memory of his friend Travis as a park to be enjoyed by the citizens of San Antonio in perpetuity, and it still is doing that. So that's part of his legacy.
And during construction of this home, he found 13 of the 21 cannons used at the battle. How did he find them?
Because he was there at the beginning, you know, we have some kind of family oral stories. You know, it's somewhat believed that he may have known they were there, or, you know, maybe saw the lay of the land. And as they were digging, I believe, into the root cellar basement, they came across a number of them. I think he tried to make sure that the stories were still told about them. And there's even a story that one of them was smelted into the bell above St. Mark's Church per his wife, my great-great-grandmother Mary, to try to turn something good out of, you know, something that was really horrific for Texans at the time.
And Colby, longtime listeners of the podcast know that you are a cannon expert. Tell us about these cannons, how they were used in the battle, and what became of them.
These artillery pieces were accumulated over a long period of time. The Alamo served as a fort to protect the town of Behar. And the cannon were pulled in, you know, and eventually put onto carriages or fixed up and then put onto the ramparts and the walls of the Alamo garrison. And then, of course, the Texans add to that number after the defeat of the Mexican army in December of 1835. So, you know, with this large grouping of artillery, and then, of course, the Battle of the Alamo takes place and the Texans are defeated. And the Mexican army re-inhabits the fort. They hold onto it until May of that year, at which point the Mexican army is told they need to vacate the Alamo. And they're told to, you know, take all the cannons and throw them in the San Antonio River. That doesn't happen. They get buried. And that's where Samuel Maverick comes in and finds them on his property many years later. And these cannons are dug up in 1852, 1871, 1876, 1889. But one that would actually impact our city is in 1863. I can't be sure. When the U.S. Army's coming and they're talking about invading San Antonio, Samuel Maverick is contacted by a man by the name of Phineas Cordova, who's the head of the Texas military at the time of the Civil War. And they're wanting to dig those guns up and use them in defense of San Antonio. And so people who've listened to the other podcasts about the artillery, they know that guns like the 18-pounder were cast around 1660. And so using them in 1860 is a very terrifying idea, especially after they sat in the ground for, you know, 20-plus years. And so luckily they were not. They were reburied and then found again by the Mavericks later, and then again when they built Hotel Gibbs.
And you can come to the Alamo and see some of these cannons on display. Where are they?
Yeah, we're very lucky to have about 12 of the original artillery pieces that were inside the garrison on the morning of March 6th within our possession. Some are on loan from the city. Some were donated by the Maverick family. Some were donated by others. And they're inside the arcade to the right side of the church when you come visit, and also inside the new Ralston Family Collection Center.
Samuel's wife, Mary, had a drawing of the Alamo that she drew in 1838, and it's considered to be one of the earliest depictions of what the Alamo looked like after the battle.
As remarkable as his life is, Mary's is probably even more remarkable because she was a young bride. He met her after the Alamo. He was returning home and met her in Alabama. The story goes she was riding a horse along a road and dropped her handkerchief, and he picked it up, and they were married 3 months later. And in her diary, December 7th, 1837, I believe, she says, "We're headed to Texas." And so what was remarkable about her is she was also a diarist, and little bit unusual at that time to have a woman who was so literate, and she really documented a lot of the early knowledge we have about San Antonio and especially how women and children lived. Samuel was often on the frontier and out scoping out lands, and she was at home defending sometimes against Comanches and keeping her kids away from, you know, rattlesnakes. And she had 10 kids and only a handful lived to adulthood. You know, again, I'm very fortunate. One of my great-great-grandfathers was one of those. Her life was very remarkable. As part of that diary, to answer your question, she did a sketch of the Alamo that's believed to be one of the earliest sketches post-battle, where it's, you know, somewhat dilapidated. Obviously, the parapet had not been added yet, and it showed just kind of a, you know, what would be kind of a typical colonial-type area. We have that hanging in our building in downtown, trying to tell some of these old stories as well.
Colby, what does it mean to historians to know what the church looked like in that era?
It means a great deal because the Alamo obviously has been through several big changes. And so to be able to document that, to tell us what the church looked like at certain times, it's important to be able to capture that history. And there are a lot of sites in Texas where we're not lucky enough to have someone like Mary Maverick sketching out the Alamo or the church, you know, or the building. And so we've lost that. So historians are always craving things like that to document the historical record.
Samuel Maverick leaves quite a legacy. The source of the term Maverick, which means independently minded, is because of him, because he refused to brand his cattle.
He was not, much like he was not a revolutionary, he's not really a cattle rancher either. He was really more into land acquisition. And, you know, our family story kind of goes that he was settling a debt and acquired this herd of cattle. It was where the modern day Matagorda Island is. And was not really a rancher, and he really kind of neglected that and assigned the taking care of the herd to a foreman who didn't also do a great job of it and kind of let them wander, and they really became strays. You know, it's arguable whether his directive was to brand them or not brand them, but when a neighbor would see them, they would say, that's a maverick or that's one of mavericks, and that's really where the term came from. He was also independent-minded and somewhat of a leader, and so that also became, you know, kind of part of the lexicon. And then Top Gun came out, and there were some cars, and, you know, it really has been kind of baked into the modern lexicon and definition of someone who's kind of against the grain and independent-minded.
His sons built Maverick Bank in 1884, considered to be San Antonio's first skyscraper, and also the Crockett Block. What are those buildings and where are they in modern day terms?
They're essentially right across from the Alamo Mission, modern day Houston Street, essentially. And as part of the development of Alamo City, as he called it, they developed a bank and some other businesses. They also honored Crockett by naming the buildings after him. And those are still being preserved and the facades being preserved for the new museum. And so
all circles back to the Alamo story. These buildings are being preserved and used for future generations to enjoy. The Alamo Visitor Center and Museum scheduled to open in 2027.
Oh, we can't wait. And excited that the city is doing such a great job preserving. San Antonio is really about preservation. And that's kind of how we ended up downtown in our business is it's also in the same area where the original homestead was, and the building, which was the original Lockwood Bank building, came available, and it played a very personal kind of part of our family history. And so when it came available, my wife and I purchased it and rehabbed it and preserved it. We got it on the National Registry, and now we're trying to tell some of these stories we're telling today.
And as you mentioned, the Maverick family has been very active in the Alamo's preservation efforts and all of San Antonio's, including through groups like the Daughters of the Republic of Texas and the San Antonio Conservation Society.
Yes, part of why we felt we wanted to preserve this building is reading these diaries. Every generation has kind of done their duty and has loved San Antonio. And really, Mary Maverick even early on wanted to build a Alamo tribute, which is where the modern-day cenotaph is, which was called an Alamo Heroes Monument. And it never got built, but that has kind of carried through generation after generation. I had a great uncle who was part of the restoration of the Riverwalk, or really the building of the original Riverwalk.
Through the Works Progress Administration.
Correct. And so we just felt it was kind of our generation's time to help, and we're excited to help with the modern day plan of the Alamo as well.
This doesn't have anything to do with the Alamo story. It is just a fun fact. Samuel's grandson, Maury Maverick, served in the U.S. Congress and is credited with coining the term gobbledygook.
Yes.
So coining new terms is part of the family history, too.
It seems to be. And so, yeah, there have been some characters along the way. Our family reunions are wild. There are multiple branches of the family, and it's fun to get together. And there'll be 400. We have a reunion about every 3 or 4 years, and everybody gets together and tells all these old stories and how we're interconnected.
As you said, nearly 200 years after the battle, the Maverick family is still supporting the Alamo. Ken, your business, Maverick Whiskey, was a key sponsor of the Alamo's recent 1724 gala, which raised money for the preservation of the Alamo site. First of all, tell us about your business.
So as part of the restoration of this building and going through many of these old diaries, there was kind of a thread where going back even to the time in South Carolina and much of the history of kind of what we do, distilling and viticulture. Sam brought to San Antonio. Their peach orchard was largely dedicated to the peaches where they would make brandy. And so we wanted to kind of reestablish some of these old ways and do honor to Samuel Maverick with a distillery. And we have a brewery as well. And so we were honored to donate the spirits to the Alamo Gala. And it was a very special night, beautiful night where there was a lot of money raised for the preservation of the Alamo.
And you spoke about this earlier, but one of the buildings your business is in is a very historic building, and your family's been working to preserve it too. It's separate from the Alamo story, but worth noting.
Yes, it was on the original homestead and behind where the house was, but later on it became what's called the Lockwood Bank Building. And it's about 100 years old, and it was dilapidated, and we restored it, and we put a distillery in it. Now we hope it's a place for meeting and telling stories and preserving some of these stories that go back a couple hundred years.
The business's slogan or tagline, motto, unbranded since 1836. So that's a nod to family history.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, everything we do, we really try to do a tribute to Samuel, Mary, and kind of the Maverick family legacy. His signature is on our bottle that was from the original Texas Declaration of Independence. We honored his eulogy is also on the bottle, where it talks that he was a honest man and really dedicated to the citizens of San Antonio.
Colby, you work with descendant groups every day in your job. What does it mean to you to work with them and see them work toward the preservation of the Alamo story?
The families that are in Texas and that carry on these legacies are Texas. Yeah, they're what make us so great. They're what make us so proud to be Texans. And the fact they're carrying the torch of their family's history is important to us. Without people like the Mavericks and many, many others, the Alamo is just buildings with stuff in it. These people are what make the Alamo what it is today and what makes Texas so great.
And Ken, what does it mean to you and your family to continue to remember the Alamo to this day?
It's so special just because, knowing that Samuel Maverick really barely made it out, and then surviving in the early times in San Antonio was hard enough. Their foresight to try to really build a city, build it around Houston Street and Travis Park is really special. And it really made me feel like I need to do more for the city. A distillery is not a direct way to do that, but it is a vehicle to restore this building, to donate to civic events, raise money, tell these stories and try to preserve them. A large part of this history came where, we have kind of a collection of old letters and diaries that one summer I decided I needed to digitize all these and started reading them. And a lot of them were just letters going back and forth between brothers and Mary and Sam, and much like the sketch of the Alamo, they were just everyday, kind of happenings, but they tell this history over a couple hundred years. And, some of the things are remarkable, and, some of them are just daily life, like the grapes froze, this winter. And but it gave a good insight into what life was really like. And it was really hard back then. That was the other inspiration, is Life was so hard back then. You just feel sometimes like we should be doing more.
Do you ever stop and think that your downtown location is just a stone's throw from the battlefield footprint?
It's so hallowed and so special. There's a lot of hairs that go off your, the back of your neck sometimes with, some of these events. And, even just the still of the night. I mean, there are lots of good, good spirits floating around too.
Ken Maverick and Colby Lanham, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to check out the podcast notes. Lots of cool links for this episode, like an essay former Alamo curator Dr. Bruce Winders wrote about Samuel Augustus Maverick and Maverick's own diary entries from 1835. We've also linked to his wife's 1838 drawing of the Alamo, plus historic photos of the old Maverick House and Maverick Bank on Alamo Plaza. You've been listening to Stories Bigger Than Texas, the Alamo Podcast.